stream as well? Okay, very good. Well, good evening. This is the review, or good morning, wherever you are. This is the review of Parashat Shkalim, which is Parashat Mishpatim, from Menachem Tzion, Shnat Tavshin Ayin Gimel. So we first focused on the idea of the Arba Parshiot, the importance of the Arba Parshiot. And we need to recognize, before anything else, that the Arba Parshiot essentially are built around the concept of the interrelationship of Purim and Pesach, so that they bring us, as the Gemara says, to the Mismach Geula LeGeula. That it's very important for us to see that there's a profound relationship, which we won't deal with now, but there's a profound relationship, if we discussed many times, between the nature of the Geulot of Purim, the nature of Geula of Pesach, and what we have over here is a transitional period in which the four Parshiot lead us into a Purim from the point of view of what this means, and then we go from there with the other Parshiot into Pesach. And the truth is that these are so, the Arba Parshiot, which we tend to think are just little add-ons, I mean, Kabbalistically are connected to four Otiot of the Shem Hashem, actually. According to the Tzidkas HaTzadik, this is Shkalim. Specifically, it's connected to the Yud of Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's connected to the Kutzei Shel Yud. The Kutzei Shel Yud is actually the Makor of Yisrael, which means that it relates very profoundly to our own identity. Now, it's true that Shkalim is actually usually not this early. It's a very early year. For Shkalim to come out with Mishpatim is not all that common. Much more common and feels much more natural for the Parshiot of Shkalim to be associated with the Parshiot of the Mishkan, basically. It comes out with Truma or Tetzaveh, or even with the actual Kitisa and the Parshat Shkalim itself. That feels the way it ought to be, because after all, Parshat Shkalim really does have to do with the collection of the Shkalim, which is Nogea, the building of the Mishkan. And even now, the reason that we are Mashmia al Shkalim is in order to be able to be Chadesh V'Avi from the Truma Chadasha for Nisan. But the truth is that the Gemara tells us that there's another element here in Mashmim al Shkalim, and it relates to the Shkalim that we have here in the whole idea of Mismach Geula LeGeula, because these Shkalim, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that Haman HaRasha is ultimately going to come and attempt to utilize his Aseret HaFeshke Shikle Kesef in order to be Kena Yisrael, and in order to undo his Eitzah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Makdim Shkalenu L'Shiklov, and therefore, somehow or other, there is an actual relationship to the events. It's not just that this is, it provides us for some type of segue in our minds and Hachona for the events of Purim, but there really is a direct connection between the Hashma'at HaShkalim before Purim and the Shkalim on Purim. However, Tosfos takes it a step further. Tosfos in Megillah says that is Loshanei Shamati Shasar Alfei Kikar Kesev Olim Chatzi Shekel L'Kol Echad MiYisrael Shayu Shesh Meot Elef K'Shiyatzu MiMitzrayim V'Yamar Sheyiten L'Achashverosh Kol Pidyonam V'Dok V'Tishkach. How exactly the Dok V'Tishkach is all Tosfos HaRosh, which I brought, but I could go through the entire Cheshbon, and there are many different approaches to how to work out Tosfos' Cheshbon. But the point, the important point to us, is that what he's saying is essentially that the relationship that we have, which people take to mean on the surface is just the relationship of the Hashmat al Hashkalim, so that before the Purim time comes around, so we mention the Chiyuv of Shkalim from the beginning of Adar. But what Tosfos is saying is that the actual collection of the Shkalim here are keneged the literal amount of Shkalim that was given by Haman, which means that this event that we speak about when we read from Kitisa and the relationship to us in the Midbar is actually a real relationship. It's difficult to see the meaning to that relationship, how it is that just because we give Shkalim, it would somehow, it would undo what it was that Haman is doing. By the way, this doesn't seem to be facing. There it goes. Yeah? Okay. Looks like it's off-center. I trust the screen. And it's very interesting. If you take a look at the Lashon of the Haftarah of Parshat Shkalim, so over there, when it describes what it was that the Takona, the Shkalim of Yehoash was, so it says over there, Vayitunu Beit Hashem, Vayitunu Oto Lo'osei HaMelacha, Asher Beit Hashem, which is, of course, the exact Lashon in Megillat Esther. Aseret Alafim Bikar Kesev, Eshkol HaYodei Osei HaMelacha. So it was actually in Haman's mind that there's a real relationship between the Asiyas Melacha, Kwa Melacha, which of course relates to the whole idea of Vayakel and Shabbat and the Melachos and the Mishkan and so on, the Osiyah Melacha, are related to the Shkalim both in Haman's mind and in the Asiyah in our Haftarah. The truth is that the relationship to Mishpatim is a lot deeper than we think. I mean, in order for us to see it, it's important for us first to review, just very quickly, this is our new approach. We will do a fast shiur on Shabbat and then expand on it a little bit, but I don't give you too much material that you've already had, allowing you to catch up on the past. But let's just remember the strange ekronic nature of Mishpatim. And basically, it's almost as if the Torah has gone out of its way to make us forget about the linear structure of time. So it's completely anachronistic, to the point where the Ramban is just cannot believe what Rashi is doing to the Parsha, in which comes the end of Mishpatim. The end of Mishpatim actually happened before the story of coming Bifnei Har Sinai in Parshat Yitro. And we keep going back and forth. And why can't we just go in a straight order? But the truth is, of course, that as he needs to concede himself in the end, what we have over here is the basis is in the Mechilta, it's a machlokas in the Mechilta, it's not Rashi taking it out of his head. There are parts that the Ramban has no choice but to recognize are akronic, because we have the Gemara in Yuma about when exactly it took place, the Shishayanim. It was the Shishayanim the basis of Mafrishin Kohen Gadol Bibeito, and that was Shishayanim was Vayachaseihu. Vayechaseu was to Moshe, or Vayechaseu was Vayechaseu, aha, which means that this was the beginning of the Parsha as it was in its natural order. It's just absolutely unavoidable to recognize that we are completely and totally disregarding any type of linear structure, so that whether you're talking about the Gemara, you're talking about the Yerushalmi, the Mechilta, Rashi, Ramban, the other Mefarshim, everybody has to deal with this on some level. Rashi seems to have completely thrown out linear time from the window, but no matter how you learn, as we've gone through in great detail, I don't want to go through it again, there is no way to avoid it. And the place where this reaches what appears to be the apex of just absurdity is where, according to Rashi, the Kriya of Moshe Rabbeinu, of the Sefer HaBrit, in which it specifically mentions that the Sefer HaBrit is the Chukim and the Mishpatim, which any simple reader is going to assume those Mishpatim are obviously the Mishpatim that we just learned about, right? I mean, we finished Parashat Mishpatim, and Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to write down the Mishpatim. But no, it doesn't refer to those Mishpatim, says Rashi, because actually the Sefer HaBrit was read before the giving of the Torah. So how could it possibly be these Mishpatim? It's got to refer to Mara. So Sham Sam Lochoko Mishpat V'Sham Niso, that's Mishpat, those were the Mishpatim that were written from the beginning of Bereshit, essentially anything that incorporated earlier, Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the Chukim and Mishpatim that were given in Mara, which ties into the whole idea that we spoke about last week with the Resh Vav Taf of Rut and Yitro, equaling together with his Yud, the entire Torah, as Chazal puts it, you bring along your Tet Vav Resh, you add the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, you're up to Taryag, and this is a remiss to the Geirut, the coming to Har Sinai. Okay, but that doesn't, it's all very nice, but it certainly is a complete violation of the simple reading of what's going on over here. And it's an interesting proof that the Meshech Chochma brings to Rashi's Pshat. And I mention it here not because I want to go into the details, but because we're going to make use of his diuk. It's a beautiful diuk. And basically what the Meshech Chochma says is that if you take a look through Kol HaTorah Kula, you know, never find another pasuk like the pasuk B'Chodesh HaShlishi Letzeit B'nei Yisroel Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Now, the way he puts it is Hamit Bonein Yireh. Anybody that looks into the Torah will immediately see Ki Zeh Ein B'Kol HaTorah Dugmato. There is nothing similar to this in Kol HaTorah Kula. To start off a description of something that happens in time without a Vov HaChibur is just, it never once happens. So it should have said Vayi B'Chodesh HaShlishi or something like that. I mean, the only thing that we have which is similar is Bereshit Bara Elokim. Bereshit Bara Elokim, of course, is the beginning of a new book. Therefore, he says, oh, this is an absolute proof like Rashi. Zemu Chachir B'Rish Rashi in the Mechilta. Ve'el Moshe Amar, that this must have been Kodem Matan Torah. Because what happened was Vayichtov Moshe et Kol HaTorah Kula is indeed a reference to Mibereshit Vad Matan Torah, which means that book was ended. Then Bachodesh HaShlishi begins a new book. So this is the book that follows the Sefer HaBrit, and which is why it doesn't begin with a Vav, because there's nothing for it to be mitchaber to. It's basically a new beginning. And so it chilichtov kemo bibereshit binyan hamatchil bifnei atzmo, and this is the only explanation that he comes up. And we'll get back to this. But what I'd like to point out is that the anachronistic structure is not limited to Parshat Mishpatim, specifically. If we move on from Mishpatim, we just keep reading into next week's Parsha. Okay, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Le'mor, Daber Al Bnei Yisrael V'Yikhu Li Truma. And that's when we start talking about the things that are similar to Parshat Shkalim. When did this happen? We have exactly the same issues that are raised in Parshat Truma. Is this supposed to be a reaction to the Maaseh HaEgel? As the Midrashim all say, right? Yavo Zahav HaKippurim, Yavo Zahav that was given to the Mishkan, V'yechaper HaZahav Sheba Egel. This entire thing is a response to Halo B'lechtecha Imanu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu response, which is, of course, at the end of Kitisa, where Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to continue to remain with us despite the fact that we made the Egel Azov, in which the answer is that Niyoseh Niflaot, Asher Lo Nivra'u, those Niflaot at Ashrat HaShchina, between Basar Adam, that becomes the Asiyas HaMishkan. I mean, so the Pashtut is that Vayimi Mochorat that occurs later, much later, is, of course, the beginning of the construction, but the beginning of the Tzivoy of the Mishkan, in which case, Truma would also be Vayimi Mochorat. It would be only after these events took place. And yet it occurs here as if it's just another mitzvah in the Torah. As we read on, we have anybody who doesn't keep in mind where he's coming from, who would just be reading Truma, would be reading, you know, Vayi Bayom HaShmini. And it's exactly the same thing. Doron,
אתה יכול לשבת לידי אם אתה אם אתה מוכן להסתכן. From the view, it's יותר מסוכן.
זה נכון. אוקיי, בסדר. Well, I guess we'll have to start all over again.
I mean, yeah.
No. This is bad news. No. So, again, we're continuing on with a complete disregard of chronicity. So that even as we go on into Truma, we find out we have no idea where we were at. We don't know if this Kesef HaKippurim is supposed to be the Tikkun of the Egel. When we continue to read through Truma and Tetzav and hear the craziest things we hear about, even when we read that this Kesef is supposed to be Mechaper. Mechaper from what, for heaven's sakes? Nothing bad happened. And we don't know anything about Kapara. And then we talk about in Tetzav, where we finally get around to the idea of the Ktoret, Achat Pishana. We don't even know what Achat Pishana is. Later on we find out that Achat Pishana, of course, is a reference to Yom HaKippurim, and that we need Yom Kippur. But the only reason we needed Yom Kippur was because that was the Salachti in which Moshe Rabbeinu's Tfilot were finally accepted. That's 120 days later, after the Asiyat HaEgel. So again, this continues on. Now, how far does it continue on? I'll tell you exactly how far it continues on, till after Parshat Shkalim. Basically, what happens is when we finish Parshat Shkalim, we suddenly discover, to our utter shock, if we haven't been keeping track, that we're standing on top of Har Sinai. So we read about the Parshat Shkalim, all of a sudden HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, get out of here, I don't want to see you anymore. Lech reit ki shichet amcha, just as the whole story is ending, and we didn't even realize we were still up there. So that's what we have is essentially a book that begins with Bachodesh HaShlishi, misleads us into thinking that somehow, without any warning, we've been thrust back into the linear flow of time. And then we suddenly discover, no, not at all. We haven't been on Earth. Forget about time. We haven't been in space. Basically, we've been completely out of it from the beginning of what it was that Rabbi Meir Simcha suggests is simply a new book because of the reading of the Sefer HaBrit and the writing of the Sefer HaBrit. The deeper reason, which has nothing to do with Rashi or Ramban, the deeper reason is because indeed we are beginning a piece of the Torah that is not part of the flow of time. Therefore, it's Bachodesh HaShlishi. It cannot begin with the Vav that would be Mechaberet to the prior structure of time. So that means that there's something about this period, and if we take a look at this period, I mean, basically, it's very strange because it begins with keeping Amalek out at the beginning. The Chodesh HaShlishi comes from the Vayisu Mirifitim and ends with the Shkalim that are supposed to be able to deal with Amalek on the other end. The With Tosef's understanding that this was an actuality of what happened in the Midbar, not simply the Mashmim al Ashkalim. So that means that we're basically talking about the story of the mountain here. So this is the Bo Midbar Sinai, and we somehow protect it. We take it out of all of the awful things that were going around, you know, out of the intrusion of Amalek, stop before we get to the Egel and all of the implications of the Egel, which of course itself is an intrusion of Amalek at that point, according to the Zohar. And we know why it's protected. We know why it's protected because Chazal tell us there was another element that was protected here. And that was, if we take a look at the end of the Parsha, which was another one of the anachronistic issues between Rashi and Rabban, so right towards the end, what happens is that Vayal Moshe v'Aaron Nadav v'Aviv v'Shivim mizikne Yisrael, this is in Chav Dalet Tet, Vayiru et Elohei Yisrael v'tachat raglav k'ma'aseh livnat ha-sapiru chetzem ha-shamayim la-tohar ve'al ha-tzilei b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado v'yachazu et Elohim v'yuchlu v'yishto. Now it happens to be that those seemingly innocuous words actually are the basis of all of the destruction that comes afterwards, because as the Medrash tells us, the destruction of the Mishkan as being a Mishkan that is beyond death occurs here. Because essentially, this is the beginning of the Parsha of Shmini, which was all about death. The Mishkan ends up becoming a Mashkan. It becomes a Pekida, just as the Ego becomes a Pekida. In the way the Zohar puts it, instead of its being the Ohel Moed, it becomes the Beit Moed Lekol Chai, a different type of Moed, the grave itself. And this was because of what happened here. This is the story of Nadav and Avihu and the Shivim Zikne Yisrael. And essentially, the Nadav Avihu story is completed with the construction of the Mishkan on the day of the actual Chinuch of the Mishkan, Shmini L'Miluim, which becomes the Mekor. Anybody who looks carefully at the events of the day and at the Korbanot of the day will note that it's the Mekor of all of the Korbanot that were brought in Yom Kippurim. And basically what happens is that the Parsha of Achrei Mot Shnei B'nei Aaron, where they bring Lifnai v'lifnim, Torah that they weren't mitzvahan, that's the essence of Yom Kippurim, Bezot Yavo Aaron al HaKodesh, not Nadav Avihu, without any permission, with this type of Ketorah. That's now exactly how we read it, whether it's because Shtuya Yayin, Nichlesu Lifnai v'lifnim, Eish Zara, that there were no tziva, they didn't wait for it. It makes no difference, because it's clear that the point is that the interrelationship between the events here and the ultimate Mimochorat Yom Kippurim and Shmini, death and destruction, actually began at this point, except that it's hidden from us. Why is it hidden from us? So as the Medrash tells us, it's hidden from us because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want to mess up the Simcha of Kabbalat HaTorah. So that this has to be a period which remains pristine, it remains untarnished, and nobody is aware of the dangers that are going on inside of this story. But because of that, when it comes to my own simcha, and this is b'yom simchat libo, b'yom chatunato, b'yom simchat libo. So we have first the Kabbalat HaTorah, that's my daughter. And then there's the b'yom simchat libo, the day of my own simcha, which was the time at which I was meant to enter into the Mishkan. That I'm willing to destroy, because it's mine. But I'm not going to destroy Kabbalat HaTorah. Now, we've traced all of the problems of Kabbalat HaTorah, and the Kof Aleihem Har Chagigiyot, and the idea of attempting to go beyond what it is that you are ready to actually listen to and understand. The entire idea that we have, that Torah is meant to provide us with answers and solutions and truths with capital T's, and that it's there in order for us to know what the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim calls a mental illness, to believe that kind of thing. And again, if you think about it, you can instantly see what a mental illness that is. I mean, for us to pretend when we're finally, thousands of years later, beginning to understand how little we know about the nature of reality or what is happening, what it is that we're interpreting in our brains when we talk about a reality, to start talking about the truth, or why doesn't God just tell us the truth, and so on. is a joke. It's not simply because it's not within our capabilities. It's because there is no such thing as that type of solid reality any more than there's such a thing as a solid planet. I mean, there's just simply interrelationship of forces that are interpreted by us as being a particular reality. This is how we live, and this is how we have to live. That as if. And so everything that we do is an as if. Now we come finally here, as we stand here before our Sinai, and it's fine. We at last have come to the moment at which we recognize something is wrong, but this is only later. Now, before we get to an explanation of what's going on, I want to point out the most remarkable coincidence. And that is, insofar as we thought that Mishpatim and Shkalim are essentially not linked, that it just happens to be that it works out when the leap year has been put off a little bit too long, that Parshat Shkalim falls all the way back in Mishpatim. The truth is, first of all, as we've just seen, essentially, the Bachodesh HaShlishi ends with Parshat Shkalim, and includes Parshat Shkalim. But what's amazing is that there is another story, which is precisely like the story of Nadav Avihu, in which exactly the same thing happens. Somebody thinks that he understands. And the danger of being exposed beyond what he's capable of understanding happens to him exactly as happens to Nadav Avihu. It starts going to his head. And remarkably, where is that story? It's the story of our Haftarah, except that we don't know the whole story. We only know the first part of the story. The rest of the story we have to read, not in Melachim, but we have to read in Divrei Hayamim. So what happens in our story? It sounds great. Amazing story. Here is the boy King Yoash, and he's being taught by Yehoyada Kohen. And he ends up becoming so amazing that he basically summons Yehoyada Kohen to complain about the way that the Shkalim are not being taken care of properly. And because of that, they make the whole Takona, Vayikov Chor, Bedalto, which become now the Shofarot, which is the entire Masechet Shkalim is built around. Turns out that Yehoash, together with Yehoyada Kohen, have essentially structured for us Masechet Shkalim with all of the issues of Shkalim and its ultimate impact on the future. But, amazing, what happens with these Osei Melacha, he's the one that figures out Osei Melacha, it's connected to Osei Melacha and Gilat Esther before it happens, right? We don't find that language used elsewhere. It stresses in the Pasuk that Vayas Yosh, as Hayoshar B'nei Hashem, Ko Yamav Asher Horahu Yehoyada Kohen. So as long as Yehoyada Kohen was around, everything was great. And he was a wonderful, wonderful man. When Yehoyada Kohen died, something horrific happened. And what happened was that the exposure that he had as a boy, now that's the background. The background is that Yehoyada and his wife saved Yoash from Atalia. Atalia managed to murder the entire family of David, so that Yehoash was the sole survivor that kept Malchut Beit David alive, which means that the ultimate Geula is a result of Yehoash. Now, the only way that he could hide Yehoash was by bringing him into the Kodesh HaKadosh, in the Chadar HaMitot. Now, the Chadar HaMitot brings us all the way back to Yaakov Avinu, falling asleep in Beit Miloni, in that intimate setting in which he comes to recognize that although I never would have thought of sleeping in a place like this, all of a sudden I've discovered that it's meant to be slept in. So the Shemesh sets, and he discovers that the Beit HaMikdash is essentially a hotel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Tzadik Zebal LeBeit Melodi, ridiculous, he's got to stay overnight. The sun sets and he's forced, he can't leave. Yehoash is actually raised in that Chadar HaMitot, the only place in which he was safe from the prying eyes of Atalia and her shlichim. He lives a long time, Yehoyada. He lives, he's 130 years old. So Yehoash has a long time to do all kinds of nice things. And he does. He's only 6 years old at the time. So he's got a long time to become king, to deal with all of these things. Yehoyada Kohen dies. As soon as Yehoyada Kohen dies, a group of people come to him, they say to him, look, There is no way that you could have survived in a place where the Kohen Gadol, if he walks in with the wrong machshavas, drops dead, and that's the whole story of the Gemara in Yuma. That is our parsha, Mafreshim Kohen Gadol. That's what we learn over here from the Vayechaseu HaAnan. Now, how the heck did you survive? There's only one explanation. You are a god. Yes, said Yoash, I always felt like a god king. And they bowed down to him on Yom Kippur. Kodesh HaKadosh, Yom Kippur, bow down. Knisa Lefnai V'Lefnim, sound familiar? So this is exactly what is going on here in Mishpatim. With Nadav Avihu, same thing happens to Yoash. At that point, he goes awfully sour. Who walks in this horrific moment but the son of Yehoyada HaKohen, who is a Navi? His name is Zechariah ben Yehoyada. And he makes a massive to-do, screaming and yelling and bringing people in and said, this is just awful, and how could... And Yehoash has him shot. And that, of course, becomes the end, because that was the blood that never stopped boiling up, and that was the blood that Yirmiyahu refers to, exactly what it was that Aaron HaKohen wanted to avoid when he made the ego. Shouldn't be a Kohen V'Navi, Yom Echad. Therefore, goes makes the ego. That's the end of Parshas Kohen. Here. Weird. So that means the things that appear to be unrelated to this story actually are profoundly nogea, the very connection between the Nodav Avihu being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and there too, it literally causes the Churban, as it mentions in the Pasuk itself, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu was hopelessly angry against Yehuda after this happens, and that becomes now the source of Holocaust for Bnei Yisrael, where there was no way to stop that blood, and it just kept rolling and rolling, and we have all of the keynote that refer to it, and so on. So we have the story in Divrei HaYamim, Vayizkan Yehoyada, Vayizba Yamim, Vayamod ben Meyahu Shloshim Shana b'moto, Vayikbru b'ir David im ha-melachim. He was buried together with the kings because he was the one who essentially had provided for the continuation of Malchut Beit David. V'achari mot Yehoyada bo sarei Yehuda v'ishtachavu la-melech, az shama ha-melech aliyah. And he believed them, and he responded to them. V'yazvu et Beit Hashem elokei avotam, and so nothing helped. Ruach Elohim lafshat Zechariah ben Yehoyada HaKohen, v'yamod me'al ha'am, v'yom elam ko amar Elohim, lama atem ovrim et mitzvot Adonai v'lo tatzlichu, ki azavtem et Adonai v'yazov etchem. This continues on after they kill him. Vayikshu alava yergemu aven b'mitzvat ha-melech b'chatzar Beit Hashem. In the chatzar of the Beit HaMikdash, he's murdered. V'lo zachar Yoash ha-melech ha-chesed asher asah Yehoyada aviv imo. The man who saved his life, who cared for him his entire life, v'yaharog et b'no. He killed his son. Astounding. And so, v'yilu tkufat ha-shana, that was the beginning of the end, Allah chel aram v'yavol yudav yushalayim, v'yashchitu et kol sarei ha-am. And this was Azvu, ki Azvu et Hashem Elokei Avoteihem, Vet Yoash Asu Shvatim. That was the beginning of the Aliyah of the Nochrim to Yisrael. So it's a pretty astounding thing. Essentially, we're going from Shiva Asar B'Tamuz and the destruction that was caused here with Nadav Avihu, all the way through to Tisha B'Av, to the keynote that we read on Tisha B'Av. And it's shocking that we would use someone like this, someone that was capable of doing something like this, as the essence of the Haftorah of Shkolin, as the Mekor of the Parashah of Shkolin. I mean, you'd think, you know, we wouldn't even mention a guy like this. He's just awful. And yet we pretend everything is just fine, just as we do over here with the story of Nadav Avihu. And what's interesting is that both these stories, Nadav Avihu's story and Yehoash's story, are fundamentally tied up with Geula, not simply because it's the Haman and the Shkolim, but because, of course, the actual coming of Mashiach, the actual presence of the Malchus Beis David, is Yehoash, remarkably, for everything that goes wrong afterwards. So Nadav Avihu, as we know, Kabbalistically, become Pinchas. They appear all over the place. They appear on the Kisei of Shlomo. That makes them into Eliyahu. That makes them into Malach Abrit, the Mavaser. The Shkalim becomes the ones that make the second Beit HaMikdash possible and the destruction of Haman, central to our future and our entire identity, which is linked to that Kutzo Shayud, which is the beginning of the Arbar Parshiyot, Parshat Shkalim. You came late. So the Haftarah would, let's think about the way in which ultimately this story here of Mishpatim could possibly have to do with the essence of Geula and with all of these events which seem to, in their very source, seem to have problems going on. JJ, would you mind opening the door a little bit? Let's get in some fresh air, some cool. Pass me the control. Turn off the air. The coming stifling loose stuff. Thanks. Anybody out there who wants to take 30 seconds to get in your fridge and get a drink, now's the time. What is Mishpatim really about? What is the Brit of Mishpatim really about? What would the Haftarah have been if we wouldn't have interrupted in order to have the Haftarah of Parshat Shkalim? So it's interesting that what the Haftarah would have been about was the brit that the Navi says was made between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, Bohotzi Otam Eretz Mitzrayim. At the time that I took Klal Yisrael out of Eretz Mitzrayim, I made a brit. And what was that brit? That brit was, I told you that you're going to have to send your Eved Ivri and your Amma Ivri, you're going to have to send them free. Now you didn't listen to me. And even though you yourselves, you started with a brit, and you made a brit between yourselves. Achrei krot ha-melech tzidkeo brit et kol ha-am asher b'Yerushalayim, likro lahem dror. And that was the brit that you made with tzidkeo, l'shalach ish et avdo v'ish et shifkato ivri v'ivriya chofshim. And then you went and you took them back again after accepting that brit. Therefore, I'm telling you what I'm going to do. I'm going to call Dror to you too. A Dror, El Acherev, El Adever, El Ra'av. Now, we know that there's a very few psukim in Mishpatim that actually do talk about being Shaleach Eved Ivri. It sort of doesn't sound like that's the brit. It sounds like it's a small part of what Mishpatim is all about. And yet, the truth is that the nature of Mishpatim in its entirety is expressed beautifully by the Gemara, which Rashi brings, when he talks about the din of Ritziata Ozan. Why is it that the Ozan specifically is what we put a hole through when somebody wants to be an Eved? And why do we put that hole through the Delet and the Mezuzah? So what Rashi says, a very beautiful Madrash, which he says, listen, this was the Delet and Mezuzah, which were in Mitzrayim. Of course, Mitzrayim is where we went free, but the dam on the mezuzot and on the dlatot, you could sit right here, Rav Moshe. There has to be some punishment for that, anyway. And so they heard, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim, v'lo avadim l'avadim, avadayim, they're not avadim l'avadim. This guy whose ear heard this, obviously he's got a hole in his ear. Can we say in English, he's got a hole in his head? Meaning, these things don't seem to penetrate. This guy basically has got a hole in his ear. This is the right place to put the hole in his ear. Because what we're talking about is the nature. Anybody who hears this, of course, that's not true. Anybody, first of all, it doesn't even say that here anywhere. There's nowhere in Mishpatim that occurs. Kiwi b'nei Yisrael avadim. That we read about at the end of Vayikra, not here. We get to Bahar b'chukotai. I mean, even if that's back on our Sinai, it's certainly not what the Anochi Karati Brit seems to be on the simplest level here in Mishpatim. But it means that that's how we're defining the essence of what it is that we experienced. Now, the way that we've understood that in the past is to recognize that Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim is an operational statement. It is not meant to be an identification. I am the God who took you out of Egypt. That's not the point. The point is that there are certain words that create what it is that they're talking about. Those are called operational in terms of language. This is an operational statement. The recognition that Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiticha means that the source of our experience of freedom has to be in Kabbalat HaTorah. Now this, of course, was Merumas to Moshe before. Zelecha Ot Asher Adofi Shalachticha. The Ot is coming Bifnei Har Sinai. We understand that the Amida Bifnei Har Sinai qua Amida is in and of itself meaningful. And that's Pachod Asher Shlishi Bo Midbar Sinai. The way that we know that is because we actually celebrate Nagar Asher Pesach. What is that supposed to mean? We were brought in front of our Sinai but never got a Torah. What would be the point of coming before our Sinai? So what it means, therefore, is that that experience was a different level of identity of what it means to be a Ben Yisrael, a different sense of self. The only way in which it's possible to transcend the strange liberty that everybody else focuses on when they think about freedom. They don't really think about freedom. They think about liberty. They think about being free to do what they want, which is not freedom. Freedom is the freedom to choose to do what you want. Where everybody else is terrified of freedom, essentially, attempts to hide from freedom. The only moment that it was possible to achieve that identity, which we came to understand what it means when we talk about freedom, was that moment in which what it is that we are, what our consciousness is, and the way it relates to the recognition of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that and only that provides us with a completely different sense of what we are. Let me just review, before we get to this, what it is that seems to be happening. We saw last week, and it seems to be continuing here, that there's a hidden, almost anti-establishment, sort of second foundation. Those of you who are familiar with Asimov's foundation series, there's almost a second foundation that's going on in the background that is dealing with Klal Yisrael. People that we would never have included in the story of the history that we're used to thinking about. People that the Torah insists on including. So when we were talking last week about the introduction of Kabbalat HaTorah with Yitro, we came to understand that that was a reference to an entire history of Yonadav ben Rechav and the way in which Yirmiyahu in the end utilizes Yonadav ben Rechav to be a reconstruction of the Brit of Sinai, in which they become the ones who are able to construct a Torah beyond the Halachot L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, Talmidim of Otniyahu ben Knaz. The way that we come to the whole concept, by the way, in Purim, Mimakom Acher, Revach V'Atzalah Yamod Yudim Mimakom Acher. What in the heck is a Makom Acher? The original Makom Acher, which occurs in Ma'aseh Bereishis, which is the story of Zera Acher, the Medrash identifies as the concept of elsewhere, where it is that you would least expect it. And what is that referring to? Ruta Moaviyam. Was that what you would expect our Google would come from? Sodom? Lot? Ruta Moaviyam? Yitro? Rabbi Akiva and Ikvata the Mashiach and Agar? Coming from the family of the ones who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash? I mean, the whole thing is very strange. Yehoash becomes the Makor of the Shkolim because he's the one that violates the whole meaning of Yom HaKippur and the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
And then we have Yerovam and his friends and the Arba Melachim, the Rabbi Meir and Acher himself, who is so much part of that story that the Yerushalmi sees it merumas in the actual story of Ruth. Ulini halayla, im yigal chatov yigal. Those were the words that Rabbi Meir says to Acher. So something's very, very strange is going on. The identity that is drawn from that Kutzar Shayud before the Yud Kei Vav Kei of the shame is an extremely subtle identity whose regular structure of time, structure of history, the linear structure, which keeps insisting, by the way, every time we talk about the Midbar's history, we will always mention these people that we don't think we like. So there will never be a time that we won't mention none of you. They're always going to be there. They're always part of that story. And the same thing is true here. We don't have an ultimate goal and an ultimate Purim unless it's where you would least expect it. So what's happening is that around the makif, as opposed to the pnimi in Kabbalistic terms of Klal Yisrael, there is an entire circle which keeps forcing the direction of history from the people that you wouldn't expect to be the ones that would be so central to the development of that history. Now, what happens here is clearly an experience of that sense of anachronism. When we talk about Adelat and Mezuzah in Mitzrayim, hearing Keli B'nei Yisrael Avadim, and that's absurd. They didn't hear anything. There was no Keli B'nei Yisrael Avadim. That was the beginning of the Yitzhak. So how could they have heard Keli B'nei Yisrael Avadim, which occurs in the reconstruction of the events on Har Sinai and Bahar B'chukosa? So it's obvious that when we hear the Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, which of course was obvious all along, if Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to be answered, Eim lo ya'aminu li, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was answering him, sure they will. After this is all over. But what is good does that do me now? What do you mean after it's all over? That's a year and 3 months from now. I'm talking about I'm supposed to be going to them. So obviously that statement means that what we're talking about is a level of identity that is completely re-evaluating and retrospective of everything that occurs. Now the truth is that anything truly significant of this nature will always do that for you. And the way we explained it in the past, I think, was very simple. You're standing in front of Har Sinai, the recognition of the Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the recognition of the absolute power of the, which is what enables you to do this Na'aseh V'Nishma, to be able to throw yourself into a relationship, which began with Lech Techa Acharei Bamidbar, which ends, as the Tzeduki says to Rava, you guys are out of your mind. How do you get yourself involved in something like this that is going to be way beyond your capabilities? You don't know what you're doing. Who ever heard of jumping into a relationship without knowing what you're talking about? And that, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, that is the whole secret. That's the Raz Shemalachei Hashareit Mishtam Shimbo. So it's clear that what enables that, the only thing that enables such a thing, is where a person discovers what it is that they always want. The truth is we go through life feeling that we're looking for something and we don't know what that something is. We never know what the something is. And we keep trying things out because we always believe if only I had this or if only I had that, then that would be the thing. And it always turns out, of course, as everybody knows, be very careful what you wish for because you might get it. And then it turns out it's not what we want at all. But there are those things in which there is, as the Rambam describes, hakara. There's a recognition of something that you always knew. That is the first time that you experience yourself. Now, on the simplest level, that's experienced in love. Anybody who falls in love suddenly recognizes, but this is what I always thought was missing, and I couldn't even understand it. I didn't know that it existed, but now I know. And because of that, they're willing to jump into things that they never, ever would have considered from a rational basis. And have no idea where it's coming from. But of course, this happens in what people call a calling, a vocation, where all of a sudden you
My gosh, this is what I always wanted. This is me. So this is a new discovery of identity. Now, once a person has that, then that means that the entire past is experienced by him in a completely new way. Everything that he had once looked at in a certain way as part of a quest, where he had no idea where it was going, is suddenly experienced by him as a necessary step in the achievement of what it is that in the end he now recognizes himself to be. In that sense, yes, the Delita, the Mezuzah, and the Ozen were actually Shomeach, Yiliv Adei Yisrael Avadim. And that, of course, is what Yom HaKippurim is all about, because that's what Teshuva is about. Teshuva is not about thinking about the past and insisting that, okay, I'm sorry. Teshuva is about achieving a different sense of one's own da'at retroactively. And that's literally the way we do Atarat Nedarim, which is why we do that for Yom Kippur. So what we say to a person is, when we're looking for a petach, look, had you known at the time where this was going to lead you? I mean, is this what you really wanted? The guy says, no. So then the lashon of the Atarah is, okay, so tehei b'datcha, just be the way you really were. And that's exactly what this is all about. Be the way you really were, because everything else wasn't really what you were. It was a mistake. It was taking you where you thought you needed to go, and once you saw how ridiculous it is, you suddenly recognize that this wasn't me at all. So what we're talking about, and this, of course, is Makish B'Atam La'ar Sinai, it's the Atam Refidim, it's B'Teshuvah. It's the essence of Teshuvah. That's Yom HaKippurim. That's the Kesef HaKippurim. That's Purim being Yom HaKippurim. Both of these are days of new recognitions and new identities. And this is why the Zohar has a very strange story about Eliyahu. I won't go into this. There's a lot of strange comments that he makes about himself and so on. He talks to himself a lot. But in the middle of this story, he talks about the achievement of Elokei Yisrael. And of course, that's what happens at the end of the parsha. Why Yiru et Elokei Yisrael? And this is what happens to Nadav Avihu. This is what everybody asks. I mean, isn't there also a pasuk that calls Hashem Melech HaGoyim, right? So if he's Melech HaGoyim, what's so great? Milo Yiracha, Melech HaGoyim, Gilecha Yata. I mean, doesn't it say that also? Oh, says he, there are so many people who make this silly mistake. Yes, indeed, he says. So many people get confused. Because, look, read the rest of it, okay? We know for sure, it's the Mispar B'nei Yisrael. That, there's no question. Therefore, it's Melech Yisrael. What about this Melech HaGoyim? Well, what else? What does it say? Take a look. Ki b'chol chachmei ha'goyim u'b'chol malchutam me'in kamocha. Can you imagine a Jew saying something like that? That's the most utterly ridiculous, idiotic kind of thing. You indeed are the king of the nations because, gosh, you're even smarter than Aristotle. I mean, it's just unbelievable, says Elio. Can you imagine? I mean, v'tavau yuhech lo mistalki b'haikro l'rum. How can they not get beyond that? You know, you don't go any higher than that. It's horrifying. So this is your concept of what it is to have a Melech HaGoyim. So who do you think is saying this pasuk? They're saying that pasuk. They'd like there to be a Melech HaGoyim. But that is the whole essence of the difference. This living in the Kodesh HaKodeshim of Yahweh, this Re'iyah of Elohei Yisrael, of Nadav Avihu, this Kutzar Sheyud of Parshat Shkalim, and this is traced, again, Kabbalistically, Parshat Shkalim to be in the original Or HaRishon, of the Or HaGonitz, for exactly the same reason. Let's understand what is meant by this Sod Shemalachei Asheret Mishtamshim Bo. What does that mean? The Sod Shemalachei Asheret Mishtamshim Bo. What do you mean to use? You mean their mitgadrim bo? This is how it is. I mean, we bring a raya from the pasuk, of course. Gibore koach osei devaro lishmoa bekol devaro. So that's a reference to malachim who first are osei devaro. That's naseh, and then lishmoa bekol devaro. That's nishma. Obviously, the malachim asharet know about that. I mean, utilize, in what sense utilize? What do we mean by utilize? And the idea of this being the Ruz, this being Banai, this being the essence of my relationship, is that this is to them obvious, is the essence of the difference of Larum, who goes up and who doesn't go up. How can you go up? And here is the essential issue. Remember that the Malachim all along had a problem with humanity, did not understand what it would mean to be human. That's the Ma'anosh Kitiskarana. Remember that Moshe Rabbeinu had to address that issue before he was Zochet to Torah, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you can't answer that, then there's no lakach the matanot ba'adam. There's no taking Torah, Shivita. You stole it. You brought it down to earth because you were Adam. You answered that question. The answer to that question is linked directly to the Malachi Asharet Misham Shimbo. And let me explain why. When we talk about Malachim, it's taken thousands of years for us to get a handle on what would be the meaning of a Malach. You know, I mean, we're very prejudiced with the Christian vision of these little flying around things. We know that the nature of a Malach, the way Chazal tell us, is something that comes into being to carry out instructions and then disappears. Except for Malach HaSharet. So that a Malach, in our terms, is essentially an instruction set. It's an algorithm. But in the deepest sense of Shliach, it's the way we would give instructions to a computer. So that, follow this line of code, this is what happens, and then you could throw out the line of code unless you want to use it again. Basically, what we're talking about is something that has only a virtual existence, which is noted only in what it achieves. And we talk about this, that's why we use the word malach for messenger RNA. It's the same idea. So that what you're doing is, you're translating, essentially, codes of instructions, which then are not part of you at all. So that what it is that you are is only that which is achieved by instructions that are given to you. Freedom consists of being able to write your own instructions. That freedom is Malachi Asharet Mishtam Shimbo. They write their own program. It's not just that they understand it. Because the point of Sheirut is that it needs to be a program that is heuristic. It needs to be able to understand what needs to be done, not to be programmed by somebody else. Otherwise, it's not a misharet at all. It's exactly when we talk about a misharet, it's creating a bot that's able to go out and do things for you without being given specific instructions, correct? That's what you want to do. You want an agent, in modern terminology. You want an agent to be there, working, looking around the web for you, making your schedule work, doing all the things that you need to do so that your valet brings everything in without you needing to tell him. But that's exactly why it has to be Lishmo HaBakol Dvaro after the Asiyah. I don't need to hear first, because if I did, I wouldn't be a Malach HaSharet. But by the same token, I wouldn't be fully human. Because the nature of that humanity, which is very difficult for a Malach to concede, is that it's not a virtual existence. It's the only thing that can directly relate to this Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And therefore, what we're talking about in Parshat Mishpatim, and actually throughout this entire period, as we'll see, is the achievement of self, an achievement of self which is the source of our freedom. And because of that, it has to be anachronistic. It cannot be part of the flow of time, because it is completely a function of what it is that we achieve in that freedom and how it is, therefore, that it rewrites for us the entire nature of reality. There is no other way to choose, if you think about it. Anything else would be decision-making that is based on what already exists. In order to choose, you have to, as Eliyahu Navi says here, Husab and Zohar says, you have to be able to go above. And that's clear. It's clear mathematically, it's clear in Gödelian terms, it's clear in conscious terms. Either you stand outside and you're able to say, this is what I will to happen. Or, if you remain inside, it happens for you, because it's a default situation, which is going to be caused by whatever it is going on around you. whatever is going in your brain. There's no way to avoid that. It's no different than any other animal or than any of these 70 umot, in which their vision of what they're looking for in terms of their own identity does not include anything beyond. There's nobody like you in Kol Chachmei HaGoyim. That type of vision of what it is that we are interested in discovering about ourselves forever closes the door to freedom. Now, what did they see when they saw Elokei Yisrael? So, here we get closer to the idea of Parshat Shekalim. They saw something very strange. Vayaret Elokei Yisrael, v'tachat raglav k'maaseh livnat ha-sapir. In the world is that supposed to mean? K'maaseh livnat ha-sapir. So Rashi brings a very beautiful medrash, which tells us, actually the targum is that there was a very valuable stone, you know. So we had this vision of, you know, diamonds in the sky. And that valuable stone, however, was a livnat sapir. It was a stone that was in the shape, valuable stone, but it was a diamond in the shape of a brick. Why was it in the shape of a brick? To teach us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved in the actual pain of Yisrael while they were making those bricks in Mitzrayim. And Ketzem HaShamayim Latoar, says Rashi, now that they had come out of the Shibud, there was only light and joy in front of, whereas before that there had been sorrow. Now, I want to point out that this step of K'maaseh Livnat HaSapir is very remarkable in context, because we go directly from there to Zot HaTruma SheTikhu Meitam Zahav HaKesef Nechoshet Orot HaMim HaAdamim, a list of various valuable stones, Leshem, Shevo, V'Achloma, and so on and so forth, which we're going to need for the Melechet HaMishkan. It's difficult, very difficult to believe that this Vayaret Elohi Yisrael, which we find later on, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe that he needs to be able to take Har Sinai and to translate it into material technology in the Mishkan and to be able to build these things out of materials, that is unrelated to the fact that you're able to see, you know, diamonds in the sky. I mean, what in the world is material technology? What does it have to do with this? And what's even more amazing is that we start with materials, but we end up in Kitisa with cash. Now you'll notice that the Parsha in the Haftarah makes a very big fuss about not mistaking the silver that was given for the Shekalim as metal. It's not metal, it's cash. Well, obviously it's metal, but it's not to be looked at as metal. It's supposed to be looked at as value. So we have a very strange pasuk. The pasuk says that you need to be aware of the fact, Ach lo ye'aseh bet Hashem sipot kesev, bizamrot, mizrakot, chatzotzot, no kelim min ha'kesev ha'muva bet Hashem. Now this is a very strange thing to throw. Who cares? And there's all kinds of questions, because of Divrei HaYamim, it's mashma that they brought kesef, and the kesef was used for kelim. There are all kinds of problems. The Gemara and Yerushalmi, what is it saying this for? Kilo osei hamelacha yitnu. It's meant to be cash to pay the people that are working for the Bet HaKabayit. Now, obviously, there's a transition here between something which is very physical, pieces of the earth, chemicals of the earth, and something that is very abstract, not to be confused with its physical manifestation, but which, again, as time goes on, we become more and more aware of the fact that silver is, for all intents and purposes, a blip on a computer screen. You don't have to own the physical silver when you buy silver. As a matter of fact, you won't take delivery of your commodities when you buy them. You've got to be crazy to take them out of delivery. Where are you going to put this stuff? You're going to take pork bellies? What exactly will you do with these commodities? They're just trades, that's all. They're ideas. They're abstractions. They're values. That is a very sophisticated kind of thing, which is the last piece before the Maisa Egel. And yet, remarkably, as Rashi brings us, there's the lashon of zot yitznu kol aver lapkudim. What's the ze yitznu kol aver lapkudim? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows Moshe Rabbeinu a coin made out of pure energy. Not a coin made out of pure energy. In the Shemayim, that's what they're supposed to give. Are we supposed to be able to weigh that coin? I mean, we're very concerned bichlal about what is it supposed to mean to give a machzis a shekel. Machzis a shekel, in which values exactly? Is that in $1999 or is that in 2013 dollars? What exactly is a machzis a shekel? What proportion of your income does it represent? What can you buy with a machzis a shekel? Are none of these issues important to the point where we can discuss the question of yitain chetzi matbea, which is the yotze, at that time, and it becomes now a cultural thing? And what happened to the matbea shoish? It's very, very confusing. So first, let's understand what happens when suddenly we go from livnata sapir to a discussion of leshem shavo ve'achaloma. Because basically what has happened is the ultimate expression of what Matan Torah is really about and the opposite of what people think it's about. So it's not about the discovery of God. It's about the discovery of freedom. It's not about the discovery of something that is outside of the world. It's about the discovery of the nature of being. So that what was initially a recognition that here, for the first time, as opposed to the identity of humanity up until this moment, and the identity of Yisrael that searched for liberty, and that had a vague notion of what it would be like to be free, and recognize that you need not to be entrapped in order to be free, which of course is the nature of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, that suddenly bursts into full bloom, and coming into a sense of existence itself is a function of this self-organization, which is me. And that the sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presenting a world against that background is a completely, but I mean, it's almost mad how different it is from the vision that people have of what it means to be human, what it means to have a God, what it means to have a Torah. Because, you see, if you take the identity of the Goyim, essentially, and we're very, very prejudiced because of our Western backgrounds in living that type of religious identity. You really begin to take the world as you interpret it very, very seriously. This becomes reality. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, has created this very solid reality. And we live within that reality. And he's given us an instruction book about how to properly manage that reality. And if we take it very seriously and read about it and learn it, and then we are able to utilize that reality to get to a better world. Something like that, it goes, you know. And this becomes the prozdor to Olam Haba, and, you know, it's just sort of, it's this little game that we play in which, you know, there's this bubble and nobody's really interested too much in it, but it's the only way that you can get to a better place. You know? But when we have this vision of reality, in which Anochi Hashem Elokecha becomes itself a source of freedom, then we recognize that our experience of reality and our experience of self and our experience of God Himself are all one and the same. That is a single experience of what it means to be. We will always be limited by our sense of existence in our capability of saying that God exists. To talk about a God that would create Shamayim Va'aretz would be an utter absurdity in the context of Kabbalah Satorah. The only Hashem Elokecha that exists in any way that is meaningful is Asher Otzitecha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. The Livnata Sapir that appears there is because the things that we would view as being historical coincidences, as having no real importance, we suddenly turn out to recognize, what do we don't have any real importance? Nothing has real importance. Unless you consider the fact that Tachat Raglav Kimaaseh Livnata Sapir has real importance, because there is no other expression of being except that. You think that because there happens to be, and we've spoken about how the Vav of Ela Mishpatim, because of this, is the connection between the missing Vav and Ela Todot Shamayim Varetz Behibaram, that missing vav, which is the missing vav that disconnects us from a multiverse, as the Midrash says. It's because we don't have a vav that we essentially can ignore the entire process of universes selecting themselves and so on. Kodesh Baruch Hu is borei olamo t'makrivam, but it's none of our business. Because after all, Eilat Odot Shemayim V'aretz B'baram, the rest of it, you know, it's just sort of a backdrop. The Ve'ela Mishpatim changes that backdrop. Because for the first time you recognize that even a self-selecting universe, in which the materials, the actual bonds that exist between forces in the universe as it is, as we experience it, those things that in our minds are diamonds and those things that in our minds are coals, because of the way in which the forces between the atomic structures are set up. That's all. That's the only difference. Is it coal or is it diamond? It's exactly the same thing. The fact is that, of course, you'd say, well, that's simply coincidence. It's all a function of what the basic mathematical values are at a certain very simple, maybe six or seven issues that need to be determined as the universe self-selects, right, from possibilities. So what real meaning is there? But that's because we are so prejudiced that we continue to look for real meaning against a backdrop of what we call real reality. The nature of freedom is the recognition that the particular mechanics are not the reality. The reality is an interrelationship that can connect the way in which we experience reality, the way in which there is a will to create, the way in which we can utilize those experiences of reality, whether it's in terms of the actual materials of the history of that reality or the events that take place within our history, and connect them, because in our minds they become an actual experience of the Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which is the source of that creation. The fact that that may mess us up, of course it messes us up. It messes up Yehoash. It messes up Nadav Avihu. Well, obviously, the Torah messes everybody up. Well, we know that because Zot HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe is, according to Chazal, poison. Sam Moshe means with which Moshe poisoned Bnei Yisrael. Wherever you're exposed to the thing that you always realized you were looking for, it's always dangerous. Well, obviously. But it's exactly the same way that every human being needs time to grow into those things that become themselves. Does that mean that they never knew what they were looking for? Do you think there's a child out there that doesn't know about death, even though he's never heard about it? Do you think that there's a child out there that isn't terrified by the understanding that something terrible is going on beneath the surface? You think that those nightmares and those monsters under the bed, that those are coincidences? You think that there's a child out there that doesn't know about sex? No, he doesn't know. Of course he doesn't know. But that understands that something is going on that he doesn't know about. You think that the experience with death is particularly grand for him? The experience with sex the first time is particularly grand for him? Or any of the other things that we look for? But the fact is that the experience of ourself is linked to this entire process of self-discovery. Don't ask questions about Nadav Avihu and Yehoash. Ask questions about Kabbalat HaTorah itself. There we were standing and experienced the Kafale and Har Chagigit. So what? And when we jump out of Mitzrayim and Lech Lecha Acharei Bamidbar, be completely unprepared and not knowing where you're going, you're right, 100%. You're going to come back just a few months from now, if not less, and say you abused us. Yes, it's true. It was wonderful back in Mitzrayim. Sure, it was great. We didn't have to think about anything. That's true. The rat race is a wonderful thing. We can watch TV all day long. Go ahead. All of this is true, but it doesn't change for a moment the discovery of an identity that now knows itself and that now can live in a world in which all of the things that everybody else looks as being mechanics and a diamond is forever. Is to us really a diamond is forever. Forever in the sense of including the entire process of what it took to create that diamond in our mind, of relating that diamond to an act of love, of understanding how it would be that eternity could have something to do with the Liftat HaSapir.
Those are unbelievable developments, and they ultimately achieve an abstraction of the idea in which Haman is going around trying to buy us, and in which we laugh at any attempt at viewing value as mechanics. To us, the reason that the Hakdama of the Shkalim is so powerful is because at this point, giving the Shkalim is a tribute to the nature of our relationship to reality that doesn't require mechanics. It requires values. Values that are assigned by us, by our commitments, by the amount that it cares. And that's why the Gemara goes out of its way to say the same thing happened to Haman. He thought he was buying his way. And Ahasuerus' response was, man, keep the money. Because the Gemara says, yeah, because he didn't really understand how desperately Ahasuerus wanted to get rid of the Jews too. And that's the beautiful, ironic contrast of what we talk about in value and they talk about in value. But that difference is brought out so beautifully by that one Rashi that talks about the Ozen, that anachronistic Rashi. Because think of what it says. Here is the Ozen Sheshamal Har Sinai Kiri B'nei Yisrael Avadim. And what did he do? V'holach zeh v'kana adon la'atzmo. Now, hold on a minute. V'holach zeh v'kana adon la'atzmo? He bought himself a master? What the heck is that supposed to mean? The master bought the slave, not the slave bought the master, right? That's an unbelievable possibility. What is Rashi saying? This is the Medrash. And he's saying exactly what the key is to the whole idea. There is no such thing as being bought for an Eved Ivri. If you engaged in that transaction, what happened is that you took the guy's cash to get him as your master. Because you were looking for a way not to be free. So you bought yourself a master, you idiot. But that's what you did. Don't pretend that you sold yourself. You didn't sell yourself. You bought the other. And this is directly connected to the very idea of how we view that cash, which is meant now to be entirely a different type of netina, a different type of value, a different type of shekel, and a completely different way of relating to the world. A way which is the source of the actual achievement of the Revach Vatzala Yamod Ayudim Mimakom Acher. It's not just something that discourages Haman. It's not a tzchus that is something that allows us to get HaKadosh Baruch Hu's geula. It's the actual conceptual basis of what allows us to get out of the Gezerah of Amalek. And that is, there are no mechanics. It's the clarity of the recognition that ultimately, even when we play mechanically, we're playing because we understand that the nature of that mechanic is ultimately not based on any reality that exists outside of our perception, experience, and relationship to that reality. So it's because of that Mordechai can tell Esther, look, you know, there is nothing to do. So therefore, why don't you just go in, you know? And it's basically, we don't need you, you know. Because he first thought she didn't want to go in. We don't need you. You can go to sleep if you feel like dropping dead. You know, atu beit avich tovedu. And that is the reason that she's able to achieve what she achieves. Had she gone in with the shlichut of Mordechai originally, which she brilliantly diffuses, makes it clear to him that it's idiotic to go in. What exactly do I achieve, so to speak, when I go in? How is this a valid way of achieving an end? You know perfectly well that it's ridiculous. I'll just get shot. So you're saying, well, do something, you know, so get shot, but at least try. Come off it. There's no such thing as just try. We're not interested in trying. We don't do things like that. Don't you understand? And he's forced to respond to her. You're right. You're right. That's the only way to look at it. Well, that makom acher comes from here. Just like the shkolim come from here. A makom acher. It might be the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It might be Ruta Moaviyah. It might be Yisro. It might be the destroyers of the Beis HaMikdash. It might be Andrianus Kesar. But whatever it is, it's the thing that you least expect would be the way that you could mechanically achieve the freedom that is the only true source of Gula. And now it's time for my review.
We have to run.